Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
This is the Michael K. Show podcast. Listen live weekday afternoon starting at 3 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.
Hi, this is David Cohn. The Michael K. Show starts now. Don't screw it up, boys.
Thank you, David, and a good afternoon, everybody. This is indeed the Michael K. Show. We thank you for joining us on this Thursday. It's February 16th, 2023. Michael K., Don LaGreca, Peter Rosenberg with you until 7. We've got a lot of stuff to do. A little bit later on in the hour, we are going to talk to Joe Buck on the passing of Tim McCarver, legendary broadcaster, 23 World Series. He broadcasted on the national level, worked for the Mets and the Yankees, amongst other teams, as their lead analyst, and he passed away today. So we'll talk to Joe about the guy he worked with for the first part of his career at Fox. We'll also talk to Mike Tannenbaum in the 5 o'clock hour, because the Rogers stuff is simply not going away. It's going to be a big story, but we will start off this show with the Knicks. And the Knick Recap is brought to you by Jack Pocket. And I'll tell you what, things have changed. I've changed my opinion about them as well. They are a fun team. You could see potential there. They seem like they have a nice mix. They're 8-6 without Mitchell Robinson, who's one of their defensive anchors. But Jericho Sims and Hartenstein have really stepped up and played very, very well. So yesterday, they beat the Hawks, and they beat them decisively in Atlanta. And helping them out, ironically enough, was the Nets beating the Heat. So what did that mean? Well, that meant that the Knicks all of a sudden are in the sixth spot. They moved ahead of the Heat, and the next one ahead of them would be the Nets. And you would think that the Nets are going to slide down a little with the trade of Durant and Irving. So if they do and the Knicks could get to the fifth spot, you can allow yourself to dream, everybody. The Knicks could play the Hawks. They could play the Cavaliers in the 5-4 game. And I still think the Cavaliers are a better team, but they could win. The Knicks could win that series, and then all of a sudden they're in the second round, and we have a completely different feeling about this team. And as Don has said earlier in the week, maybe if they do go that far, guys, maybe, just maybe, you've got a situation where they're going to be a destination for great players.
See, that's the dream. I'm not telling you not to be excited about what's happening here, but I think everybody realizes this sport doesn't honor the underdog. So you're not winning a championship. You're likely not getting out of the second round with this team. And that's fine, because I don't think anybody thought they'd play in the second round when the season began. It's a fun, exciting team that's been winning and fun to watch. But the dream, Michael, is can you get to a place where you're a consistent playoff team, you win big games on national television, you win a playoff series, which they haven't done since 2013. We're talking 10 years ago. The last time they won a playoff series, where people will look and say, I like that Knick team. I like the energy. I want to go play for them. Because that's the only way you're going to become the Celtics or the Bucks or even the Sixers, is if you can start becoming a destination. And the only way you can really do that, or like Kevin Durant said, you know, make the Knicks cool again, is not changing the logo, the uniforms. It's winning on a consistent basis. And it feels like they might be on their way to doing that.
And what they could do. You know, I say there's a lot of negatives of playing in New York now. You know, the harsh fan base, harsh media, things like that. But when you see on national television a series at Madison Square Garden and the way that place rocks, every player loves to play at Madison Square Garden. They circle those dates on their calendar. All of a sudden, if you could see the Knicks playing in the playoffs all the time and being the recipient of that love rather than the boos, then it does become something that other teams might look at or other players might look at and go, you know what, I want some of that.
I might be guilty of being your typical talk show host and reacting as if the people that call and tweet represent the entire fan base. Mm-hmm. But am I off to say that maybe the most positive group of fans in New York are Knicks fans? Like, I don't know if they... you know, when you look at the Jets are always waiting for the other shoe to drop. They took to the streets after that one playoff win against the Hawks a couple of years ago. Like, I think
aren't
this
Ranger
team,
fans pretty good?
Yeah, I think they are, but they've also had it pretty good over the last few years. But for a Knicks team that hasn't, we're with Michael, we're talking about dare to dream about getting to the second round. I mean, it's been a long time since this Knicks team has been championship worthy. We're going on three decades, yet the fans are still passionate. They get excited about the team. Like in other teams, am I wrong, Peter? Like with the Mets, it's like, oh, what's going to happen? You know, the Jets, how is this going to fall apart? I maybe I'm off base on this. I do feel like the Knicks fan in general stays very positive when there's been very little reason to be positive. With the bing bong, remember a couple of years ago, sometimes it's
bing
comical.
Bong.
But they do feel like they come with an energy of not the other shoe's going to drop, an energy of I think this is the year.
Yeah, I mean, listen, we've said this for a long time on this show. It's interesting because the team's been so bad. But you can absolutely make a case this is the best fan base in the city. And we know that sometimes the building is full because, you know, there's a million tourists there, blah, 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 blah. But when it comes down to the actual Knicks faithful, that base is special. And they don't need that much to be really excited. And right now, guys, they're actually getting something. I mean, who would have reasonably believed that we kept saying they need – show us some consistency. Stop being two games above 500 and two games below. Show us something. At 6 over .500 going into the break, after making an acquisition that clearly seems like it was a great move, and basketball people all seem to think the Josh Hart thing was a great move. Jalen Brunson is a bigger star than, guys, did any of us think he was quite this good?
No.
Don't think any of us did. You got a guy who may not be a superstar, but is really, really good. Plus, a Nets team in front of you that's bound to sink. I don't know how you're not in a chipper mood heading into the All-Star break if you're a Knicks fan. You have to be.
And you know, we talk about their fan base, guys. Their fan base, I don't mean this in a pejorative way. They're kind of delusional. Because they see things that you know others don't see. And then when we come on the air and we criticize certain things about the Knicks, they get angry that you're always so negative. Knicks fans always accentuate the positive.
That's what
other
I'm saying.
Other fan bases in this city, they're always looking for the negative, or as Don said, the other shoe to drop. Knicks fans are looking for good things to happen, and they're finally getting a nice thing right now. A team that's six games over 500. They have 33 wins at the All-Star break. That's the most they've had at the All-Star break since they had 34 in 96-97.
Right.
But so just it's for a long time coming.
Just for Peter to say, hey, they're six games above 500, I mean, that's okay. It's not great, but it's been so bad for so long, and I really feel that as bad as it's been, the Knicks fan does skew positive. They defend their players. They killed you when you were critical of Julius Randle last year. They defended him even after he had given the fans the finger. They defended him. You know, they love Barrett despite his shortcomings. I mean, they're not ignorant. They'll get on the team.
They did boo Randle, though, last year after he had a great season before that. Remember?
Well, but I think a lot of that was because of how we were still getting a lot of calls of people still trying to be positive. You know, fans are going to boo, but I don't know if they ever gave up on him the way sometimes fans give up on players in this market and hold them to a different standard. And I'm just saying there's been a lot of teams in this market that have lost as much as the Knicks have. And I don't think they've had a lot to be proud of or excited about. And yet I still feel like they skew a way more positive. They skew more positive than Yankee fans do. And they've got a terrific team every single year, right? Giant fans were killing Eli, and he won you two Super Bowls. Like, so you talk about how tough it is to play in New York because the standard is so high. I don't know if it applies to the Knicks. You can get a safe landing at the Garden if you come with effort and you try and you give them a little piece of something. Maybe that won't always be the case because they got on Ewing when he was falling apart, but it's been so long since this team has been really good that you got to almost be proud that they've been able to stick around with this team.
But, I mean, Don, I hear what you're saying. You know, 6 over .500 is not, you know, it's not the 70-win Bulls or Warriors. I get that. However, if they do it again the second half of the season, you wouldn't feel really good about this team finishing the year 12 games over 500?
Well, of course I would. But I'm just saying, but think about what you're saying, right? I mean, this is the New York Knicks, the mecca of basketball, and it's been so bad that we're actually going to celebrate a team that might finish 12 games above 500.
But, I mean, listen, 73 and 94 and 99, this was a long time ago. That's just reality, brother, as Don LaGreca would say. Like, if you're living in a world where you're not excited because you think this is the New York Knicks, you're 75 years old and you're hanging on for dear life that this team could win something before you go. That's the reality of how bad it has been. So I think most fans would be thrilled. Listen, I don't think many people believe a team not named Boston or Milwaukee is making it out of the East this year. So you don't remotely have an expectation that this is the year really anyone except for those two teams should probably get out of the East. And in a sense, guys, there's a little bit of safety and peace that comes with that because you can lower your bar a bit. You can lower the bar to making the playoffs and winning a series, which could be possible.
It is possible, but that's why it's key for the Nets to actually slide back because the Knicks have to, in my opinion, get to the fifth spot in order to have a chance to win a series because even the most pie-in-the-sky Knicks fan would have to say, can they beat the Bucks? No. They have nobody that can match up with Antetokounmpo. They can't beat them in a best-of-seven series. Can they beat the Celtics? I don't think they can. Now, can they beat the Sixers? I don't think they can because who do they match up with Embiid and Harden? And they've got other great players on that team as well, but those are two alpha male studs. Do the Knicks have those players? No, but it would be an unbelievably sexy matchup between the Knicks and the Cavaliers, especially because they missed out and didn't get Donovan Mitchell. Donovan Mitchell ended up going to the Cavaliers. Cavaliers are a team on the come, but they have not really weathered the storm either. Remember what Tim Legler said either yesterday or the day before? He said, you know, Donovan Mitchell will prove to me when he wins a big series, and he never really won a big series and carried the team in Utah. Let's see if he does that in Cleveland. So there'll be a lot of pressure on him, but it's imperative. If they end up with the sixth spot, I think they lose in the first round because the first three teams, I don't think they match up well. But, I mean, we're talking about this when a month ago, you know, I was killing them because they're so inconsistent. They are what they are. They missed out on Donovan Mitchell, and they were going to be a playing team. That's it. They were going to be a playing team. I think we'd all be highly disappointed now if they were a playing team. Hey, I think they're much better than that.
Standard's different now. Now you're kind of back to where you were a couple of years ago, and that was fun. Where they finished the four seed when they played the Hawks and ended up losing. Mm-hmm. But getting to the second round's the destination and just trying to see if you can kind of turn things around, but you're feeling really good about this team. So rejoice in it. Have fun with it.
Rejoice.
And see if this goes somewhere. I know I keep bringing this up, but it's still the point to me. It stinks that it's this sport because it doesn't honor runs. You can't be the Phillies in baseball, right, where they can make a run. Teams like the Boston Bruins are the best team in the NHL by far, and I don't think anybody would be shocked if they lost in the first round because that happens in hockey all the time. Football teams, the Giants runs, that. So in any other sport, guys, think about how exciting this Knick run would be because, hey, you never know. Well, we kind of know that they're not beating the Celtics. They're not beating the Bucks. They're probably not beating the Sixers. So that kind of takes a little of the fun out of it. But if you're ever going to get to the point where you're now the team that's not going to lose a series, you're going to have seasons like this.
Well, that's a Knick recap brought to you by Jackpocket. Now, Powerball is $73 million. Mega Millions is $84 million. Play official state lottery games on your phone with Jackpocket. Download the Jackpocket app and get your first ticket free using code ESPN. Now, you must be 18 or older to play. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-877-8-HOPE-NY. Visit jackpocket.com/TOS for full terms of service. Now, we kind of have a light slate today. Locally, in terms of teams that are playing. So I'll give you a game time real quick.
Okay.
Brought to you by Tullamore Dew Irish Whiskey. We have the Devils tonight. They are against the Blues, right?
Yes, that's an ESPN vehicle.
That is an ESPN vehicle, and Knicks are off, headed for the All-Star break. Nets are off. Rangers are off after they've won, what, six in a row now, Don?
Six in a row, averaging over five goals a game.
Amazing. That's Game Time, brought to you by Tullamore Dew Irish Whiskey. During the big games this season, enjoy a Tullamore Dew, the original triple blended, triple distilled, triple cask matured Irish whiskey, Remember, when it's game time, it's Tully time. Mm. Please enjoy responsibly. We should not give Don short shrift to the Rangers because they're on an amazing run right now. And, you know, we always play the game that, you know, a couple of months ago we said, well, what's the team that's closest to a championship in New York? And we all thought it would be the Nets. Well, the Nets are now not the team closest. I guess the Liberty, because they have that the three great players, you can look at that. But I look at the Rangers, Don. The Rangers have a chance to win the Stanley Cup.
They do. And you know what? I don't know if you do this with the Yankees, Michael, but sometimes it's tough to judge a team that you're around all the time. And it's interesting when you go on the road what the other team, how they view you. You know, so being in Carolina and then going to Vancouver and how they talk up. Like, wow, your team's fun to watch. Wow, this team's really good. And that's what you were getting from Vancouver. Like, they started a rookie goaltender last night, Artur Seelovs, and they're like, well, they're throwing them to the wolves against one of the best teams of the NHL. And you realize, yeah, they are. Six straight wins, averaging over five goals a game. Now, they've been a little loosey-goosey defensively lately, but I think that's just coming with how they're feeling it offensively. But it's been fun to watch this team right now. They're going to be in Edmonton. That's going to be a great game against Edmonton tomorrow. Two high-powered teams. But, yeah, they're in the conversation. They're in the conversation to possibly win this division, which looked like it was out of the realm just a couple of weeks ago. So, and shout-out to Dave Maloney, who was feeling under the weather, couldn't do the game last night, so I had to do it by myself. But he's feeling better, and he's gone mend, so everything's going to be fine with him.
Now, look, if I could stop for a minute. So I just want to make it clear. Dave's okay, right?
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Okay.
Wow, that's great.
All right, so that's good. So now let's turn to you.
Oh,
I would
yeah.
Think that was one of your greatest fantasies, above any kind of fantasy that any man could have, was to have the mic to yourself for 2.5 hours, do play-by-play, and to do analysis. It must have been paradise for you.
I'm not going to lie. It's fun to just be able to call a game. I mean, if you told – you know, little Don LaGreca, you're going to call a game by yourself in Vancouver. Yeah, I'd be like, oh, my God, I can't believe I'm going to be in that situation. But still.
So you did a hockey Scully.
I did a hockey Scully. But I got to tell you, it's rough because I'm not an analyst. You know, so there is something, too, when I stop talking, there's not going to be somebody else that's going to start speaking. I've got to talk the whole time. So it was a little overwhelming at the beginning, and then I just kind of got in the groove. And the game was perfect. There wasn't a lot of downtime, no reviews, a lot of back and forth, a lot of goals. So it was easy from that standpoint. But, you know, I'm not a former player. I mean, I can analyze it as best I can, but it's tough to catch everything when you're by yourself. You really need an analyst. But I'm not going to lie to you. I had a good time last night.
Oh, we're shocked. Go. We would have never thought you were going to enjoy it. Have fun.
Have you ever had to call a baseball game by yourself?
No, the only guy in the history of yes, the only guy who called the game alone was Kenny because O'Neill missed a flight.
Wow.
So Kenny called, it was a game in Baltimore. Kenny called
honestly,
the game
baseball,
himself.
Honestly, baseball's worse.
Oh, that's impossible because there's so much downtime.
You don't have that much time to fill in hockey. You know, you get a little stoppage in play before the face-off, you know, which you can actually let breathe a little bit. But baseball, the whole thing is space to fill.
That's right.
I'm sure
that's
Kenny
right,
did a
baby.
Fabulous job.
Who did?
I'm sure Kenny did a fabulous job
that
day.
He's unbelievable because he's so prepared. You have to be ultra prepared to do a game yourself because those little, you know, times where there's nothing going on, you got to say stuff. You got to give stats and tell stories. Yeah. And Kenny was a great player, so he was outstanding. But I'm a little jealous that I've never gotten a chance to do.
Sad.
A Scully, and Don's now done a hockey Scully.
Not to be a troublemaker, Peter, but if you had to lay odds on what analyst missed a flight, you're getting even money on Paul, right?
Well, not the last 3 years.
Wow.
That's
right.
Missing
a step.
Very good. That's a nice
He's done great.
He's been on time each and every time.
Yeah, it's really.
Guys, I'm so worried about the idea of missing a flight and not making it to WWE, which you'll be surprised to know I'm always on time for.
Can I join?
Yeah. Actually, yes, you can join because we're now jumping in the car and driving to Montreal tonight. Yeah.
So what's that, 8 hours?
Five and a half.
Okay.
We got to beat this storm. There's a storm coming to Montreal basically tonight that's going to run all the way through tomorrow. So I figure if tonight I at least get, you know, 3 or 4 hours of the trip done, even if we have to stop and go to bed because of the snow, I can make it there in the morning, still be on the air for the show at 3 o'clock, et cetera. You know I don't miss this program.
No, no.
Never would. And I'm not going to miss Sami Zayn versus Roman Reigns in Montreal. That's not happening.
Nor should you.
Zayn Reigns.
That's a great drive. I mean, again, you'll be at night, so you won't be able to appreciate how scenic it is, but it's that's a nice drive.
I hope the scenic part, though, doesn't make it scary should things get a little crazy.
But here's a question I have for you, Peter.
Yeah.
So you recently got a lease for Mercedes-Benz of White Plains, right?
Yeah.
So are you using that car?
Damn right we are.
Look at the miles you're going to be putting on there.
It's not. I honestly, I haven't even been to Maryland yet in that car. Like, I don't put that many miles on anymore.
Okay.
I think I did the low one. I think I did 10,000.
Okay.
700.
I do 7,500.
It's 700 miles round trip. Big deal. Big whoop.
Wait. That's a week. You do 7,500 miles?
Yeah. Well, I have the other car I use sometimes too.
Oh, which is you own, right? I don't even know they do 7,500 miles.
Oh, they do. Yeah.
Do they send you like to like a special cheapskate counter where you where they?
Yeah, there's a cheap. Yeah, there is. There's a cheapskate.
You're unbelievable.
Counter. That's great. You're unbelievable.
It's just Let's a line of phones. Old women that only use it on for church on Sunday.
Let's go to Sherman in New Jersey. Sherman.
Cheapskate counter. Well, boy, you guys are something else. Good afternoon, gentlemen.
How are you?
I'm doing great. You know, my brother there, Don LaGreca, listen, I'm the same age. I'll be 56 in August. And we're basically brothers. Difference is I'm African-American. The only difference is the consistency of the hair. That's all. Otherwise, we're perfect twins.
Okay.
Wow.
But I just want to say homage to Timmy McCarver. You know, my love for baseball in the Mets really came of age in 1983. I was 15 going into 16. I kind of blossomed late when it came to baseball. But that guy was just fantastic. I've been kind of upset with, you know, with the Mets. You know, he left there in 1998. Current ownership would not have allowed the manager to influence the general manager to get rid of a guy because he's just being honest, you know. And I'm glad he landed with the Yankees for a little bit. Imagine the Steinbrenners letting a guy like Michael Kay go because he's just being honest and being good. And I'm going to miss Timmy McCarver. Think about it. You know, it's been a part of my life for 40 years, man, and I'm 55. So,
you know what, I'll tell you what, Sherman, he changed the way that job was done. We thank you for the phone call. He really did change it.
Thank you.
Because in the past, analysts were not that critical. So not only was he critical, but he taught the game in such a way and foreshadowed things that were happening on the field. That's what, well, you watch out here and stuff like that, and it would almost always happen. And they should be playing the third baseman close to the line,
yeah.
And then, boom, there'd be a double down the line. He was a brilliant broadcaster. 23 World Series nationally. Pretty amazing, Don.
Hey, he was the John Madden of baseball, right?
And he revitalized Ralph Kiner.
And he bounced back, you know, from network to network. He did the World Series for CBS. He did the World Series for ABC.
Fox.
And Fox, because you had to hire him because he was the best. I got to tell you, nothing killed me more than Seaver doing Yankee games. But a close second was McCarver going to the Yankees. Because there was an air of...
You know who loved working with McCarver? Bobby. They were good together. They did the games on Fox 5. There was like a package that was on Fox 5. Bobby loved working with Timmy.
But there was an air of legitimacy to say, here's a national guy. He's doing Met games. He also did when the Mets were very, very good. And, you know, to see him leave to go to the Yankees stunk. But, yeah, the caller's right. He would be critical. And you're not used to that, you know, because it's usually just everything's fantastic, everything's rosy, despite how poor the team is. He would be critical, and it ended up costing his job. But that was a shame to see him go, and I'm really going to miss him. He was terrific.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Hey, buddy, hey.
Catch the show on demand wherever you want. Just subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
But I have never seen a public area that has gone from an absolute dump to a glittering palace the way LaGuardia Airport has.
You love nothing more than LaGuardia.
Oh, it's unbelievable. I mean, because it used to be an embarrassment to the greatest city in the world that people would fly into LaGuardia Airport, and it's disgusting. It was disgusting. I don't know how they did it. I mean, the architecture, the unions that worked on it, that put this all together, it's a glimmering beacon of hope. It's unbelievable.
It's not all of LaGuardia, right?
Yeah, now it's all.
It's every terminal's done?
Yeah, I pretty much think so.
Oh, wow. I will say it's very, I mean, it's actually not a bad time being there.
No, not at all. If you like, I was 2 hours early for my flight yesterday, and you don't even mind because there's great restaurants. There's so many things to do. It's unbelievable. There's
it really,
an IMAX theater in there.
There is?
No, I made that up.
Oh.
Wow, you got me.
That's excessive.
I was like, how early are people going to be? But I will say, it's like you take for granted. You get stuck in airports for a very long time. And the reason it's a nightmare is because who wants to be in an airport? If you make it feel like a fun, pretty shopping mall, it's not too bad.
Yeah, it's a shopping mall. It's like they put an airport in the Mall of America.
But that's how it should be. I mean, honestly, as an adult, now that I'm not 14, with all due respect, I don't really like going to malls that often. But compared to hanging at an airport, of course you'll take a mall. It's a good time relative to an airport.
I love malls, by the way. Always have, always will.
So that is true, huh?
I really, yeah, that's how I spend a lot of my time on the road. I find a mall and walk around.
Really?
I love
malls.
But what do you shop for? What are you getting?
I don't even have to shop. It's the great people watching. You know, I could leer there. It's stuff like that.
You're leering.
Well, here's why I like going to the mall, because you all of a sudden you're anywhere. You could actually imagine your home, because they're all pretty much the same. Like, I went to the mall in Vancouver. I'm walking around, and then you kind of feel like, oh, this is I could be in Jersey, or you could be in New York. There's some kind of like a homey feel to it, where they're not that much different one to another. So if you get a little homesick, go to the mall.
So the Nordstrom that you bolted out of because it was too expensive in Vancouver, just like the one in New York, and then the Old Navy that you bought your coat in, just like the one in New York.
Yeah,
that's right.
And the great thing is the bargain I got at Old Navy was actually more of a bargain because that was in Canadian dollars.
Oh, beautiful.
And guess what, guys, I have some big news, breaking news, if you will.
You don't know. Wow.
Tiger Woods is 1-under through 1. That's how you get things started, baby.
So if he keeps this up, Peter, he'll be 18-under at the end of the round.
You know what? I'm glad you said that. Speaking of which, my math wasn't exactly great on the Knicks, who have played well over the first half of their season in games.
Yeah, but I'm going to defend you this time.
Okay.
Because you're just thinking All-Star break is usually the middle of the season.
Yeah, of course. But I mean, I do know that they're well past that number. I just wasn't thinking about it. They're at 60 already. I mean, it's not even close to halfway.
Yeah, it's not. Yeah, the NBA, it's not even close.
It's like halfway with the playoffs. It's not halfway for real.
Now, you know, we gave a lot of love to the Knicks to open the show, but I don't think it would be smart to completely dismiss the Brooklyn Nets. Because if you look at the Brooklyn Nets, there's a lot of talent on that team. Now, they don't have Durant and Irving. By the way, Irving sat out yesterday. Bad back, but we'll see how that works out. But, you know, Brooklyn Bridges yesterday scored over 40 points for the first time in his career. Bridges is a good player who has the potential to be a great player. And then you've got Spencer Dinwiddie, who is a very, very good player. Nick Claxton is an outstanding player. They've got good players. They've got good players coming off the bench. They've got a 10-man rotation that can really click. I mean, Ben Simmons has become a waste. I don't know what they're going to do with him and how they're going to, you know, implement him into the offense. But let's not just give the Nets the slide all the way down into the play-in. Now, I think that's what's going to happen, but I don't want to disrespect them by making as if they're not a good team. I think they're a pretty good team. They've done as well as they could do, trading away two of the best players you'll ever see.
That was a nice win last night.
And yeah, you know, I mean, that's a heat.
And I like the moves they made. They got some good pieces. They still have nice pieces. They have a lot of draft capital. They're not in a bad spot. You're right. But at the same time, when you're talking about the Knicks, if you believe in this team to some degree and what they've put together, you would think they should be able to come at least close to catching the Nets.
Yeah.
Yeah, right now it's 2.5, right?
So, I mean, that's not a crazy ask.
Was it 22 games left?
22?
Yes.
Yeah, that's definitely doable.
Yeah, it's not extraordinarily heavy lifting. You know, they win 20, they win 15 games, and the Nets win 13 games, and boom, you've caught them. Just look at it that way. Let's go to Anthony in Saratoga. Anthony.
Hey, guys. Big fan of the show. Mm-hmm. Thanks for having me on.
Peter's going to be going through there tonight.
Why don't you stop by and say hello to Anthony, Peter?
Wait, Anthony, where are you?
Saratoga.
Saratoga. Yep.
Oh, yeah. Wow. What are you doing? What are you doing around 10:30?
Not much. Hey, I'm a big Nets fan. I wanted to chime in on this, and actually I wanted to double down on Michael's point. Obviously, Nets are going to take a fall back without KD and Kyrie, but, you know, it's a team that's got a 3-game lead in the loss column right now and the tiebreaker over the Knicks. And I think, you know, a lot of times when there's a talent gap, a thing that can be a big equalizer is 3-point shooting and defense, and Nets got loads of that everywhere. So I think this is just a team that, you know, we saw them give Philly and Miami fits already in their first few games together, so Let's not count out my Nets quite yet.
Anthony, I agree. As I said earlier, right before your call, we thank you for the call. They're not a terrible team. I mean, they're not a team that's bereft of talent. They have a lot of talent. They just don't have that transcendent talent, which gives you a chance to win a championship. You know, Doc Rivers calls it a closer. You know, he compares this Net team. If you look back when he was coaching the Clippers and then they traded away all their good players, they ended up with a really good team. But they didn't win big games, he said, because we didn't have the closer, the guy in the last 2 minutes that was going to take the shot and make the shot. Now, is that player existing on the Nets right now? Could that be Dinwiddie? I don't know. But they do have players. Anthony in the mail truck. Anthony.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Big shout out to the company.
How are you?
I wanted to good, man. So I wanted to go on the Knicks point. I agree with you guys, really with everything you guys said. I think that there is three teams that can give, you know, the Knicks a run for their money in the playoffs, like hardcore. I don't think that they have a chance against the Celtics. I don't think they have a chance against the Bucks. But if you put me in a torture chamber and said you're tortured if you're wrong, I would say that out of those three teams, the Sixers being the third team, I think that they would have the best chance to beat the Sixers out of those three teams. Now, your point about the Cavs, I sort of agree with you, but I kind of see the Cavs as you know, a good counterpart to the Knicks, and here's why. I feel like Donovan Mitchell and Jalen Brunson are kind of playing on the same wavelength right now. I'm not saying that they're the same player, but I do think that in a 5-game series or a 7-game series, I think the Knicks could edge them out. I don't think that the Cavs have, you know, enough scoring that they can do against the Knicks with how good the Knicks have been playing on offense and, most importantly, the defensive side. I just wanted to hear you guys take.
I think they have a chance to beat the Cavs. If you say who was going to be the favorite in that series, I'd still say the Cavs. Mitchell is a guy that could drop 40 on you, and Brunson's proven that he could as well. You've got Garland. You've got Jared Allen, who's going to score way more points in the paint than any of the Knicks centers or all of the Knicks centers combined. They might be better defensively. There's a lot of talent. There's so much talent on the Cavaliers that they're going to release Kevin Love and buy him out, and Love's probably going to sign with the Heat. So the Cavaliers are good, but they're new. They're new. They don't know how to play in these games yet. The Knicks have played in playoff games. They played against the Hawks, and it was a disappointment. But and also, if you look to see what Brunson did last year without Luka against Utah, he did a great job. He did a great job. That's where the Knicks said, that's the guy we have to have. So he's played in those big series. We'll see. I think it'd be a fun matchup.
But isn't it kind of eerily similar to a couple of years ago when they played the Hawks? Hawks were new, and the feeling, we'll beat the Hawks. Well, Cleveland's got that kind of same feel to it. And you don't want to have the same thing happen. But you do have more experience than you did the last time because of that series.
We're going to take a brief time out, and we're going to come back with our good friend Joe Buck, who will reminisce about Tim McCarver. Joe broke into the national scene working with Tim McCarver on Fox, so I'm sure he has a lot of memories of Tim.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show?
That's right, man.
Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Welcome back to the show, everybody. We learned today the passing of Tim McCarver. So much a part of baseball New York, but obviously a huge part of the national baseball scene. 23 World Series broadcasts. And many of them with our next guest and our good friend, Joe Buck. Joe, thank you for coming on, and condolences to you, obviously, for losing somebody that obviously spent a lot of time with.
Yeah. I mean, you know how it is, Michael, when you're in those booths and you're kind of leaning on each other and feel like everybody's kind of shooting at you when you're doing the national stuff. And, you know, you got to hunker down with the person you're on the air with. So I learned so much from him. I knew him when I was a little kid. I knew him in my teenage years. I knew him when my dad was his broadcast partner. And then there I was doing the World Series with him in the Bronx at 27 years old. And knowing that I was in such good hands with the person next to me because he had seen it all and done it all and broadcast it all. I mean, nobody, I don't think, has contributed more to the game for somebody that was a two-time world champion and a big part of the Cardinals and the Phillies, couple other teams, but predominantly those two. And then, as you said, to do all those World Series 23 on national TV and such a teacher of the game and somebody who had really strong opinions and didn't back down from them, taught me how to deal with criticism when I was in my mid-20s and was a guy that if you were his partner, he had your back, and it was just a great security blanket for me over those years to be able to lean on him and rely on that great brain of his, and you know, knowing that he was there to support me, and I know that he knew I was there to support him.
Well, how was it that at the age of 27, Joe, that you weren't intimidated, and did he ever intimidate you at all? Did he try to intimidate you and say, listen, I'm the alpha here?
No, and it's a good question because I think that's where I owe him so much, because had he been that way, I might have retreated, but he wasn't that way. I know, you know, he and my dad did 2 years of national broadcast and World Series on CBS, And it was not a great 2 years for either one of them, just with regard to the way they interacted and got along. But when I was matched up with Tim, when Fox got the rights in 96, there was nobody happier about that than my dad. And he knew, you know, like I said earlier, that I was protected because whatever was going to happen on that field, Tim could probably talk his way or work his way through. And when I started with him, you know, Mike Shannon, who was our longtime partner in St. Louis, my dad's partner for 50 years, basically, with the Cardinals on radio, called Tim and said, I know you had your time with Jack. Your time with Joe is going to be a lot different. And just because my dad and I were different people, you know, I was more of the TV era. My dad was kind of more of the radio era. And I knew how to play that game a little bit. I had done some of that with the Cardinals for 5 or 6 years at that point. And, you know, we had a nice little get-together when we were first paired at the Fox seminar. And I said, you and I are going to go forward based on, you know, how you and I interact. It has nothing to do with my dad anymore. You know how I feel about my dad. And we shook hands and off we went. But he was not that guy. I could make a baseball point as a 27-year-old know-nothing kid, basically. And he would take it in, you know, maybe argue it, and maybe just accept it. Mm-hmm. And when he did that, you know, this young guy, me, had a little more credibility than I had before I started that sentence. So I owe him so much for being that way with me at a pretty fragile time in my broadcast career.
Joe, we're around the same age, so I think I have this right. Growing up, it seemed like color analysts, especially locally, were more salesmen than they were actually analysts. Rah-rah for the team. Even on the national level, you were more selling baseball than really giving strong, hard analysis. Was Tim the first one to be critical of teams and really give you the side of the game that maybe nobody else was doing at the time?
Yeah, I think that's well said. I've never thought about it that way, but you know, and there were some great analysts. I mean, I grew up, you know, us being roughly the same age, you know, I thought of national broadcast in the game of the week was Vin Scully and Joe Garagiola.
Mm-hmm.
But it was different. You're right. I mean, I think Tim was a very strong-minded person, as anybody who knew him would say. Tim would say that. And he spent, you know, he came up at the end of the 50s. He retired in the early 80s. He caught Gibson, he caught Carlton, he caught thousands of different pitchers. He played for different styles of managers. He knew how the game, in his mind, how the game should be played, how the game should be managed. And if what we were watching didn't fit into those parameters, he would say it. And, you know, he would be critical at times. And fans, you know, they always think when you're there for the national broadcast, you don't like their team or you get excited for the other team, therefore you don't like them. But he was doing it on specific players if they were dogging it or if they were, you know, playing too far in the hole or they didn't make a good throw, whatever it is. And he would make those comments, but then he would be the first guy in there the next day to the clubhouse. And if somebody had something to say back at him, he was there to take it, and he knew that whatever his opinion was based on his experience, well-founded, and, you know, I think never unjust, and he would take in whatever that person, manager, player, coach, whatever, would have to say and argue it or just digest it and move on. I mean, I think that's kind of what you want from an analyst. You don't want always the rah-rah guy. Not every team's perfect. Not every player's perfect. Guys make mistakes, and he was there to point it out, but not do it in a crazy, harsh way. I think he was very fair with the criticism he gave.
Joe, probably no run-in he ever had with a player was as famous as the run-in with Dion in 92. Did he ever reflect back on that with you over the years, and did his thoughts on it ever evolve at all?
Yeah, no, his thoughts never evolved. I think he was always he was pissed until today that happened, because I think he felt vulnerable, and I think he felt, you know, he was there with a microphone and doing his job, and even what he said, I don't think when you go back and listen to it was really that over the top harsh. But that's easy to say for me. It's easy to say for others. If you're Dion or if you're the player involved, and somebody saying that about you, you probably have much different feelings on it. So I can't really weigh in on that side of it. But Tim and I didn't ever really talk about it. And if I brought it up, I would kind of get that look out of the corner of his eye, like, don't do it, don't do it. So we never really hashed it out what went on. But I when I look at it, I'm proud of the way Tim handled it. And I think, you know, it would have been easy to kind of cower away, but Tim stood up for himself. And, you know, that's kind of what I'm talking about. He had an opinion. If you liked it, great. If you didn't, great. And he was there to kind of back up whatever his opinion was. So it was a moment in time. That stuff happens. It's live TV. There's emotions involved. And, you know, Dion was mad, and eventually Tim was mad. And those two never buried the hatchet, that I know.
We're talking with the Hall of Famer, Joe Buck, the voice of Monday Night Football on ESPN and ABC. You know how I feel about you. I don't have to say it again, but I'm amazed that you were able to start your career nationally with him, because, you know, we're kind of hinting around it, but he and your dad didn't really click in the booth. And I know how you felt about your dad. I mean, he was as much of a best friend as he was a dad. How tough was that for both of you? Because it was the elephant in the room, Joe.
It was, and I wrote about it in my book, and that's not to sell my book, because I don't think you can. It's in the discount rack somewhere in the bottom of the bookstore. So there's no money to be made on me promoting my own book. But I talked about it, and I think that kind of upset Tim. He and I never talked about that. I was in my book, kind of the time that they had together, and really just misfiring, being on different pages. And I think at that point, Tim, you know, you have to remember, Tim was it. He hosted the Olympics on CBS. I mean, he was the guy. Mm-hmm. And my dad was, as I said, kind of the radio guy coming over. So it didn't matter. My dad was kind of the guy that just moved on and didn't hold grudges. And so I'm honest when I say that when Fox and our bosses, David Hill, put and Ed Gorin put me and Tim together, my dad was so relieved. And I'm smart enough to know that I was in good hands as somebody that felt out of his depth at that time.
Did you ask your dad for his blessing, Joe? Did you ask your dad for his blessing? Dad, if you don't want me to do this, I won't.
No. And he would have never. That was the beauty about my dad, and probably why I got into broadcasting, because he never pushed it. He never. You know, it wasn't like answering to Don Corleone. It was, you know, you got your own career to do. And my career was best served by being Tim McCarver's partner. And I knew that, and he knew that, and I'm sure Tim knew that. But once we had that little meeting at our seminar, everything was over with. And we never, in 18 years together, in a pretty stressful environment, we never had a cross word. And he was the best audience that anybody's ever had. If I said a joke that was mildly funny, he would over laugh and let the audience know that he thought it was funny. I mean, that there are little things that a broadcast partner can do to let you know that they're on your side. And he did it over and over and over again. So there was no awkward moment after we had that first meeting. I'm proud as I look back that as a 27-year-old, at that time I was 26, talking to a 50-something-year-old man saying, hey, you know, let's just face this head on and let's put it behind us and go on about trying to make this great. And that's exactly what we did. So, you know, I'm the guy that wants to get it all out there. And so was he. And so, no, there was no awkwardness, but he was a big presence at that point in his life and in his career. So he could have dunked me in 2 seconds if he wanted to, but he didn't. And I always appreciated that. I was smart enough to appreciate it then. And as I look back at 53 years old now, I'm even more appreciative of it, because my national baseball life could have ended before it even began if I didn't get his blessing.
Now, before I let you go, I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you. There was just a Super Bowl on Fox. I read somewhere you might have been in Cabo. Was it odd watching it?
where I didn't. I they played. He won.
Yeah, it was a good game, but I don't even remember. No, I think it was the Chiefs.
It was a hell of a game. They did a great job, which I knew they would. They were in great hands with Rich Russo, our director, and Rich Zients, our producer. And those guys are friends of mine. I don't know Greg that well. I thought he was fantastic. I know Kevin extremely well. We worked together for years. And I'm just proud of them. I said it at the time when I moved over to ESPN, to get out of the way of somebody like Kevin and to get out of the way of somebody like Joe on the baseball side was kind of the untalked about silver lining. It's something that gave me great pleasure. So, yeah, I watched it. Was it weird? A little bit, because I think it's only human nature to go, oh, well, you know, nobody can survive if the great Joe Buck isn't there and, you know, if the great Troy Aikman. But time, everything moves on, and they've moved on, and I've moved on, and Troy's moved on. And I think everybody's happy with what they have and where they are. So I was so happy for those guys. I know what it's like to stand there and welcome 100 million people to the audience and to their TV sets. It comes with a lot of pressure, and I thought they were great, and the game was great. So it was a win. It's awkward because you're not there anymore, and I was there for 28 years of my life and did six of those things. But as far as the individuals involved, I couldn't have been happier. I texted them both after the game, and our producer and director, it was great.
It had to be a strange feeling, Joe, a last thing, to end the season the way you did. I mean, we all work for ESPN. We can say it. You didn't have the greatest lot of games all year long. And then finally, you get this incredible game, and obviously this terrible, terrifying thing happened. That must have been a crazy way to sort of end the season.
Yeah, but, you know, I look back on the DeMar Hamlin situation, which is what I think you're talking about. And I'm proud of every moment TV wise. I mean, none of that stuff mattered. You know, it was so jarring, and what we saw and what the television audience saw were two different things. I mean, there was so much going on in the field that we could see. The minute that happened, our cameras pulled away. Right. And I think our director, Jimmy Platt, did a great job with that, because you never know where that video is going to go. They pulled away the cameras, but we could see it on the field. The players were standing around DeMar, but we were high enough up to be able to see over it, and to see the feverish way they were giving CPR was really unnerving. And so you have to navigate that. I'm just proud of the restraint that everybody showed, and realizing that all that mattered was that this kid was going to be okay. And at that time, we had no idea that the story would turn out to be as amazing as it has been. And like I said to somebody else, what that crew did on the field with him was almost like landing a plane on the Hudson. It had to be perfect, and they were perfect, and they saved a young man's life. So that's all that mattered, and ratings and all that other stuff, who cares?
Joe, we thank you for coming on, sharing some memories about Tim McCarver. And really, I'm being honest here. If you get the urge to do a baseball game, I will just slide on the side and let you do the yes game. Just do a Yankee game if you just feel like calling the game.
I swear to God, on all that is important in my life, that will never happen.
Okay.
Why? Because it's so hard to replace me, or you just don't miss it?
Yes. I'm not good. It's the, I got a little deep. I would be practicing in front of the mirror over and over. See ya! I don't know that
I do it. I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
Yeah. Michael does it in the nude, by the way, when he's practicing.
I was going to say, I rarely would I be wearing clothes when I do that.
Joe, enjoy your summer.
No, thank you. But I would like to do one game for the Yankees, whose fans, the majority of which think that I don't like them. I would like to do one game as their announcer and show them the difference of how those two broadcasts would be. So,
I got the game. Fun. Yankees, Cardinals in St. Louis this year. It's a Friday night. Take it. I'll just sit and watch.
Okay. I don't think so, but I'll text Flip. We'll see if that's
okay. All right. Flip will make the ultimate decision. Thanks, Joe. Have a great summer.
All right, guys. Thanks.
All right. That's Joe Buck. Well, I was willing to give him a game. Isn't that big?
Crazy. You're generous.
Very generous.
Great.
I am very generous. Wouldn't give it to you and Peter, though, but Joe Buck.
No.
Joe Buck, come on.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast. Hear more of Michael, Don, and Peter live weekday afternoon starting at 3 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.